Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Third hour of KJ and Lyons on WEEI, 617-779-7937, text line 37937, still to come. Say what? Just in time for back to school to figure out what some of these Gen Z kids are saying in your house. John, it's interesting when you look at this wild card race that's going on. It's like, it seems like nobody wants it. Orioles 4-6 of their last 10. Same thing with the Royals. They've lost 4 in a row. Twins are 3-7. Sox are 4-6. The Tigers are 7-3. And watch this, a game and a half behind the Red Sox for the Red Sox spot, for trying to get to that wild card spot that the Twins have. This is just, the ugliness is what the Red Sox needed. It's just that they didn't need to be in the middle of this ugly.
Yeah, we've talked about, I feel like, I don't know, 3-4 weeks now about this stretch of games where the Red Sox had to get through those 10 games with Baltimore, Houston, and Arizona. And those 10 games didn't go well. They finished with the sweep of Arizona. They lost the doubleheader to Toronto. So, I mean, things looked pretty bleak, really. This time last week, or really this time like 5-6 days ago, things looked pretty bleak. Now 3.5 out, at least you're in range, right? Like 3 games, that's a series. So at least they're in range now as they get into this month. They still have a couple weeks to try to make up ground here. And, I mean, to me, I got to tip my cap to Kansas City. I mean, they're in a brutal stretch right now. They're holding their own. It feels more and more like if the Red Sox are going to make the playoffs, it's going to be Minnesota is going to be that team they're going to have to catch.
Well, that's why I say they should probably thank them, you know, very much, winning only 3 out of their last 10. And I think after winning the other day, they just come off of losing 6 straight. But if you're the Red Sox, you have to take advantage of those situations, right? Before, we were talking about when the Tigers were an upcoming series, the Tigers were a sub-500 team. They are now over 500. So it's like if there's one team that's getting it right, it's actually the Tigers, who are really one game out of the win column from where the Red Sox are. Yeah. Right. So that's the other thing is, as things are going bad, if the Red Sox lose again today, then now the Tigers are, what, a half game behind the Red Sox?
And this next week, to me, is really pivotal, because not just for the Red Sox in their own right, but September 6th, 7th, and 8th, yeah, coming up, the Royals host the Twins for a 3-game series. So you're going to pick up at least a game, maybe more than a game, on one of those teams, no matter what happens in that series, if you can play consistently good baseball. And I think that's kind of been the frustrating thing with the Red Sox over the past 2 weeks is, they get swept by the Diamondbacks, so you don't feel great about how they went through that stretch of those 10 games. But then you're like, all right, well, they have Toronto coming up. Well, then they lose the first two in the same day to Toronto, right?
It feels like the Houston series was so long ago, doesn't it?
It does. And then they're in Detroit now, and Friday night, I mean, they're up 4-0 in the eighth. They end up blowing the save, but they win. So you're like, all right, they won. And then yesterday, they go against Skubal. You know, he's dominant.
Right.
They lose. So now it's almost like,
he's a left-handed
player. This is a big game today. You know, they're not giving themselves any breathing room. And they're not stacking wins on top of wins, if that makes sense. Like, they're not.
Yeah, that's what they have to do.
They're not putting together like a good 8-game stretch of baseball or a good 12-game stretch of baseball. It's, hey, they'll win a couple like they did in Houston, then they get swept by Arizona, right? They'll win one against Toronto, then they'll lose one. They'll win one Friday night against Detroit, then they lose on Saturday. I mean, we're at a point now. I mean, you know what today is, KJ, right?
September 1st.
Yes, we are in September. We got only a month left in this season. And Alex Cora talked about that on the pregame show with Joe Weil yesterday. He had his interview with Will Fleming. He goes, you know, August is over. You know, it's September time now, and they need to start stacking good games on top of good games, or else they're going to find themselves in a spot where they don't have any room to get out of the hole they're in.
Well, you might start saying, wake me up when September ends. 617-779-7937. Let's go to Rick in Salem. Rick, thanks for calling KJ and Lyons, and good Sunday to you.
Brothers, good morning anyways. Yeah, hey, before I get to where I'm going on this, that trade deadline was absolutely brutal. And I have no faith in the offseason at Breslow making any type of deals. I don't want his or whoever did the scouting beyond these guys. Why would you acquire a 230 right-handed hitter in Danny Jansen? That I don't even have no clue. But, brother, anyways, can you get where I was going? I don't care what anybody says, and they keep defending this guy. I listen to Cora, the big guy. Rafael Devers is so overrated. The starters, the last three games of that Toronto series, either you can play or you can't. If you want to, if you throw it, or you don't, go in and disable this. And missing that last three games was inexcusable. I don't care what anybody says. And he goes through these bad stretches at the wrong time. It always seems to be. I'm just not a Devers guy, brother. And if they could move his contract in the offseason, something, I would be more than happy to see him go. I'm just not a Devers guy. What do you guys think of that?
Thanks for the call. Well, what else do they have?
Well, and I feel like
who else
Devers is a guy. So, I disagree with Rick in that. I think he's a great hitter, okay? But I think Devers is a guy that if you're going to, say, be a championship-level team, I think you want him to be, like, your second-best player. You, if that makes like, if you had Mookie Betts and Devers was your second-best player, then you feel a lot different about the Red Sox. Whereas Devers being your best player, there's still some inconsistencies in the field there. I don't know how strong his voice is as a leader, and I'm not saying he can't lead. It just feels like he likes to be the guy that...
I don't think that's his persona, is to be the loud guy.
Exactly. So I feel like on a team that can win a championship, he's like the second best type player. Or it may be just not the vocal leader of things, but if you look at where they're at and that he kind of has to be the leader. I mean, everybody's a young guy, pitchers and hitters, right? It's all because even last year, I know he was out a lot, but you still had Chris Sale. So vocal guy, been a champion, right, with Devers, pitcher, but vocal guy. Now, I mean, you don't really have that guy outside of Devers that has championship experience, has been a vet for many years, you know, has had good numbers for many years. So I think he's been kind of thrust into that role. And again, I think he's best off as the second guy.
Well, here's the thing. Yes, he needs somebody else, because if he's the only guy, then guess what they get to do? They get to pitch around him. They don't give him everything. Right. So if you had another guy, Devers may be the better of those two guys. He just doesn't have another guy. So when he's standing out there alone, the numbers aren't gaudy. I mean, look, Aaron Judge is only able to do what he's doing this year because he has someone in the lineup to protect him. Right, so yeah,
he had Stanton last year, Soto this year.
Right.
And I know Stanton's tailed off a little, but he's still a presence.
Right. He doesn't need Stanton as much as Soto's providing what he needs for him. That's all the Yankee talk you're going to get out of me today. But that's the thing. Devers has no protection in the lineup, right? He shouldn't even be a two-hitter.
Yeah, he really hasn't had protection since Kyle Schwarber left. I mean, I guess if you want to include, but Bogarts a lot of times would hit ahead of him.
Right. So he's always been kind of the big bopper. Maybe when JD Martinez was still here, in terms of someone who can give you pop and protection.
Yeah,
right?
That's true, because JD stayed a year after Schwarber, so I was wrong about that.
Right. Yeah, well, I'm not going to call you on that. I guess the point I'm getting to is, would you rather see Devers suddenly become one of the best players in baseball, top five, on somebody else's team, or have him on your team and believe that they are going to go get somebody to pair him with next year? Look, this was the year you had to clean up the bad blood that was still remaining from Chaim Bloom. Clearly, we weren't wrong about Verdugo, right? So these things had to play themselves out and manifest. And how we talk about with the Patriots, that the Patriots are really 2025 conversation. It's kind of similar with the Red Sox. They've just overperformed. Who thought at the beginning of the season that at September 1st we'd be bellyaching about losing a couple of games here and keeping themselves close in this wild card race? You did not think that was going to happen, and that's been done with virtually no. I mean, think about it. When it's almost like a quiz question. What season did you get more from Trevor Story since he's been here?
None of them. And I'm not trying to be unkind. It's just he's been out so much.
Right. Like, right. That's the thing. It's like, did he have more at bats this year than he had last year? Because it was more. You knew it was more than the year before, or was it the year? So that's the thing. Like you. What has he had? Probably 300 at bats total since he's been here, Trevor Story.
So, I mean, because what did he play last year? Like 6 weeks, like at the end of the year, and he was pretty good. I think those 6 weeks, but that was
played 4 weeks this year.
Not even. He got hurt on April 5th, so that was the second week of the season.
Second week, so two weeks this year. Six weeks last year.
His rehab assignment is supposed to start today. So figure if that takes a week or so, that's only 3 weeks he'll play in the majors in September this year.
Yeah, so I guess you stepped into something interesting there about the call-ups, right? Because with the September call-ups, do you look more to say, okay, obviously Liam Hendricks is going to be in that mix. Do you look more at the pitching, or do you say, hey, do you believe that you need to find somebody else who's a right-handed hitter in this mix to try and assist? Like, or do you say, we got to go with the guys that we have, and these guys are just coming in as defensive replacements or pinch runners?
Well, it's funny because all year, and I would even say going back to last year, it was always pitching, 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 pitching. But the Red Sox offense has gotten really quiet over the past, I don't want to, 3 weeks or so. I mean, we're talking about they lose 2-1 last night. I know they scored 7 runs Friday, but you look at some of those games, you know, they got shut out by Toronto, then they scored 3-3, you know, 1-2-1. Like, a lot of these games over the past 2 weeks, they've been 3 runs or fewer. And that's been a problem, especially when you have struggles on the mound. So, like, when I look at these September call-ups, because Marcelo Meyer's not going to be part of it, their reports are Christian Campbell's not going to be part of it. So, I mean, at some point, these guys that we've been hearing hype about for years are going to have to get their feet wet in the majors. So, I'm like, I don't know, just to use it, like, if Roman Anthony is one, fine. Or they want to make the move on Kyle
Teal, fine. If the team was worse, right? If this was a 500 team,
you have a chance
I think
to make
they
the
get
playoffs.
To play. Yeah. Yeah, John in Maine, thank you so much for calling KJ in Lines. You're on WEEI. Good afternoon.
Afternoon, guys. So I think the Red Sox have that second guy in Tristan Casas. I just think we weren't able to see that, you know, formulate this year with the unfortunate injury to him. But honestly, I think Tristan Casas could be the best player on this team if he can stay healthy and put together a full season.
John, thanks for the call. Yeah, I think Devers is at a point in his career where you can't acquire could-bes or hope-to-bes, right? You need to go get someone who's established because he's now heading towards that established level. If Casas is going to be that guy that's going to be part of, you know, part of the offensive juggernaut that they're going to have, you know, that's going to be something in the future, then Casas will be that name as Devers starts to age out, right? So the idea is to say that, well, Casas is the guy right now. I would say, okay, you still have to develop that because you haven't seen enough to say that this guy clearly is the protection for Devers and you clearly need to get him some protection. I don't know, like this, I'm just going to throw something crazy out there if you're the Red Sox. Do you potentially make a phone call with the Los Angeles Angels and see if they're willing to come off of Mike Trout once he comes back from injury?
The issue there, though, is the same issue with Trevor Story. I mean, what's it been, 7 years since
now,
Trout's played a full
now
season?
Now, here's what I'll ask. Like, I would rather take a 70% Mike Trout than probably a 100% Trevor Story.
No, and I agree with you, but I think the issue is just he physically hasn't played. It's not even like he's playing and he's 70%. He's missed, like, huge chunks of, I think, 6 or 7 straight years. So, and I'm not saying I'd be totally against it. I don't know if I'd bank on, like, that being the guy. Because
if you got a bad ankle, I don't know if you want to go into the wall.
The Casas point is interesting because I know he's hitless in his last 4 games, but he came back. He was really good after he came back, and he's been a guy that I think because he missed so much time this year and he missed the last couple weeks of last season, people have kind of forgotten how good he was last summer. I mean, he was an awesome hitter all, like, June, July, and August, all of last year. That's in him. And I think that is a guy that you can put in this lineup around Devers and give him protection. The problem with Casas is there's been the injury issues, and also he can be weird, which is not maybe the end of the world, but that
obviously... You talking about on the field or off the field?
Yeah, you know, off the field. Like all that,
no, that doesn't count. Yeah.
Well, no, but the stuff like, you know, when he was in Worcester saying, oh, it feels like I'm getting stabbed every time I move, when the team had said he's working fine in rehab, like things like that can get old over time. But okay. I think, like, if you're looking at the next 2 or 3 years, I do see Casas as someone that can go in that lineup and be protective of Devers. But even that, KJ, it's still another lefty. Like, they still need a right-handed bat that is a legit power right-hand. I mean, they play at Fenway Park, and they have a lineup that's focused on lefties. Like, at some point, they need that impact right-handed bat.
Well, this is what baseball is all about, is when they get around to you the second or third time in the lineup, and it's the same thing with the career. So Casas could have that great summer that he had, 20 home runs. And so but you didn't know how to pitch him. But now you know how to pitch him. You know what his weaknesses are. You know what he goes after. What's great about Devers is your mistakes can turn into doubles. Like, I'm talking about pitches two inches off the plate, which nobody's supposed to swing at, but he can get enough power to the ball and keep it in play that you go back and tape, you're like, hey, if I throw that ball 30 more times, I'm going to throw it 30 more times, And if he gets a hit out of him, it just shows his greatness. That's why I think the caller kind of underrates Rafael Devers. And he's been around, you know what I mean? Like, people know how to pitch to him and still haven't been the most successful. We still have to see that with Casas. KJ and Lines, WEEI, good Sunday to you, 617-779-7937. Text line 37937. Patriots getting ready for week one. A lot of things happening in between there, but we'll get to that shortly. Right now, it's time to trend.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Jacob Lassner. KJ and Lyons kicking off your Sunday, getting you into the brunch hours. 617-779-7937, text line 37937. We are here until Red Sox pregame against Detroit. Pregame with Joe Weil starts at 12:40 today. So, John, they are slowly but surely getting us close to the 4 hours. We'll be here for 4 hours tomorrow, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. I'm thinking about my old schedule here. So we'll be here tomorrow for your Labor Day. I don't know about you. I just cannot wait for, like, pro football to start. You say this every year. College football doesn't really do it. It's like a little teaser, you know, like, okay, these guys aren't as good as the ones you'll see. But I think it's just going to be a very interesting NFL season. And we'll go through each conference, and I think we'll come to something pretty interesting that I don't think I would say out loud, but I just feel that it's just that year to happen. Let's just start with the Patriots. We'll get them out of the way first, and then we'll move into these other teams. Man, what is the best you think you can expect from this team in terms of wins?
I mean, five.
Right.
If things break really well, six. But I think it's five. Yeah.
And I'd be okay with five, because how many was it last year?
Four.
There you go. So that's better than
I think
last
what you
year.
Want, really, if you're a Patriots fan like me, what you want, obviously you want them to win the Super Bowl every year. But if they can't do that this year, I think you want to come out of the season feeling good about Drake May and Jerod Mayo. Thinking, all right, this quarterback is legit. He's going to be the future. Jerod Mayo had a good year. He's going to be the future. Because as we've seen, if you get the head coach and the quarterback right, you can be a Super Bowl contender.
Here's where I think what will make a 5-12 season look really good is that there are no blowouts like the Dallas game last year.
Or the Saints game the week after.
If this is a game where, man, these guys were in virtually every game, and they're not going to always be in every game, but if it felt like they were in every game, like you remember at the beginning of the 2021 season where even though they were losing games, you felt like they were in those games. They were in the San Francisco game. They were in the Dallas game. They were in the Brady return game. If you're in these games and you know the future is still to come, then there's some hope. Where I do have a concern is how much is the running game going to just be worn down? Like how between Gibson and Stevenson, you feel like, man, you really need them to remain healthy for it to stay close, right? Because it's going to be a lot of ball control, clock management, special teams you're going to need. Maybe you'll get some breaks on special teams. I did say that Jalen Reagor was the odd man out. Did I not say that every week?
Yeah, and I think it's going to all come down to the offensive line, because they are going to want to run the ball a lot, and if you can't block, you can't run. And they can't protect Jacoby Brissett and Drake May. They're not going to be able to throw the ball. So I think so much of this is just going to come down to how well that offensive line plays and how much it can potentially improve as the season goes on.
All right, let's look at the AFC East now that we've got the Patriots out of the way. We're not saying they're going to be in contention for a wild card. Bills,
yeah, it's
Dolphins.
Dana number seven incoming.
See, that's the thing.
Focused on Banner 19 and next June, KJ.
Well, but here's the thing for some Patriots fans. This would be the season to really sit down and have a beer or two with somebody who was able to witness the bad seasons for the Patriots before it became a double dynasty. I mean, it's really a quadruple dynasty. Really, if you got five good years of dominating the league, you're something to talk about. When you've had 20 of them, that's totally unheard of. So have a beer with someone older in your life. Just hear what it was like. What was good? What was bad? What was taken away from it? Things like that. I think that'd get perspective instead of, I expect to be in the Super Bowl every year. Like, come on now. You know, this is not Daniel Bryan. Yes, yes, yes. Oh, and the AFC East, Bills, Dolphins, Jets. Who wins the division? Who is a surprise story in the division?
I think the Jets win the division. And look, yeah. Rodgers has to be healthy, and him going to Egypt for a day during mini camp is a big red flag for me. But I still look at that roster, and I think top to bottom, probably the best balance of talent, right? They have great defense, good receiver in Garrett Wilson, good running back in Breece Hall, solid offensive line. Like, there's enough there, I think, top to bottom, where I think they're going to win the division. I think the surprise, Miami's going to have a winning record, but they're going to fall off a little bit. I don't think they're going to be as good as a lot of people think they're going to be.
So I'm with you. I have the Jets actually winning the East because of the same things. Think about it. They won seven games with Zach Wilson as the quarterback.
I know that. I mean, that alone is an endorsement of the roster.
Right. So Aaron Rodgers stays healthy. I think the trip to Egypt, that's going to be him, right? That's always that's red.
But he's only going to be there for a year.
Walking red flag. Right. I think they make their strong run, and I think he retires next year. I think if he plays healthy and they make a strong run. And this would also be part of the Aaron Rodgers, you know, I'm going to go out just when they need me another year. And I'm going to retire. You got another year in your contract. I'm going to retire. So I think this is his last year. I think they win the division. And then I'll get into later where I think they end up falling, where they fall into things. I think the Bills are going to affirm that this is now the other side of the woods for them, that their window has closed. I mean, great. It's one thing to have Josh Allen, but if they had kept, Gabe Davis, I can understand that, you know, by
Isaiah McKenzie too. Didn't they let him go?
Yeah, like really, yeah. Like Shakir was the like their fourth option last year, and now here's their primary one. So when Stephon Diggs goes to Houston, you're like, okay, they do have I want to say Keon White, but the kid from Keon Coleman from Florida State,
and Dalton Kincaid, a tight end,
right? But if you're talking about, hey, we're gonna lead on the tight ends. And we've got a rookie receiver, and we've got some other guys who are kind of left behind. If Gabe Davis has stayed and was the lead receiver and didn't go to Jacksonville, I would still kind of buy into the Bills, so I don't buy into the Bills. With the Dolphins, I think Tua showed his emotions to the point where, yeah, the dude might wear a slip a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, dude, your slip is showing. When he went off, when you started talking about the Brian Flores thing, it's like, you know what? Brian Flores technically wasn't wrong.
Brian Flores, I think, had a better winning percentage in his time there than Mike McDaniel has right now. Only right, by like a game. But
right, because remember,
couldn't have been that bad. And they didn't have Tyreek Hill then either.
As bad as things were with the Dolphins, they were finishing stronger with Kirkpatrick.
Yeah, remember, I think it was Flores' first year. I think, didn't they start like 0-8, but they finished 5-11?
Right.
Like, including beating the Patriots in Foxborough at the end of 2019?
Right. So Flores wasn't necessarily wrong because there was something in your headspace. Now you have all these, think about it. When you talk about the Dolphins, you're not even, how many times do you hear people even say Jalen Waddle? Everything is Tyreek Hill. All these, so you got all these weapons, and now you say, hey, you know, the guy was kind of mean. Well, you know, the owner was also looking at another quarterback, right? Didn't Ross get suspended for several games for having Tom Brady on a yacht?
The thing. If you really like Tua, and I know it's Brady, but it's
I love Tua so much that Brady's on my boat.
Yeah, exactly.
So Tua showed a little bit of his slip showing. A little bit of the slip is showing. That okay, you're in your emotions. And you, I think that when he took that hit that everybody saw on television that just absolutely just devastated him, I don't know if I would be doing a whole lot of talking. I would be doing a lot of gratitude knowing that they still gave you that contract where I still believe he's one shot away from potentially being out of the league after that shot.
Yeah. Plus, honestly, I kind of agree a little bit with Brian Flores. Like, yeah. Has Tua been better with Mike McDaniel? Yes, he has. But he's also been better with Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle. They've always had a great running game there, too. Right. Now they have Devon Achane or Achane, whatever. But
Achane, yeah.
Yeah, Achane, excuse me. So, like, he's also been lifted up by a lot. Like, is he better than he was 5 years ago? Sure. But is he an elite quarterback? No.
He's gotten his participation trophy. He's just part of that group. Like, I need all these things around me to succeed. Yet, at one point, we needed a relief pitcher for the most part to come in and finish games because I didn't believe you could. You know, Flores took the high road. So we both have the Jets winning the AFC East. I never thought I would say that. Does that even sound right coming out your lips?
No, but I think top to bottom.
Speaking a foreign language.
Yeah, I know. It's like, because think about it. Even remember when Richard Seymour had his retirement ceremony for the, he got his red jacket?
Yep.
And it was like, hey, the Jets are always a homecoming game.
Yeah.
I don't know. Not anymore. Let's go to the AFC North because this is a compelling story brewing there. Ravens, Bengals, Browns, Steelers. Let's talk about the Steelers first because they are going to go with Russell Wilson as their starter. Do you think Russell Wilson is the starter around week five?
So, yeah, I think so. And this is a Pittsburgh team that with Mitch Trubisky and Kenny Pickett was a playoff team last year. Like, so
that's even worse.
Like, I think the AFC North, KJ, is going to be the best division in the NFL.
I think so.
Yeah, and it was a great division last year, but I think it's gonna, I think all four teams made the playoffs last year, or maybe Cincinnati just missed, but I think it's going to be the best division in the NFL.
And we both agree that the Steelers are not going to win that division.
No.
Okay, so now let's look at the Ravens, Browns, Bengals. We can eliminate the Browns winning that division, even though they won it last year. No, they were wild card last year, but they had, what, 12 wins?
Yeah, it was something like that because they lost to Houston in the wild card round. They had to go down to Houston. And remember, they threw back-to-back pick sixes.
Right, they had the better record than Houston, but had to go down there because
the division winner thing. Yeah.
Right, that's right. So this comes down to...
game.
Yeah. So look, the Ravens-Bengals, I think, is just kind of one of the... it's probably the most fascinating subplot that's going on in football right now, division-wise. Flip a coin, do you say? Or do you give the advantage to the Ravens?
So I do give the advantage to the Ravens. I think the addition of Derrick Henry is going to prove... like, they're going to hold him back, I feel like, for part of the year. And then that second half of the year, they're going to
pull a Gronk.
They're going to let him shine, and he's going to add a dimension to that offense. Because, again, J.K. Dobbins is a good back. He's been injured, but they've had the Gus Edwards was there. He's pretty good. But they haven't had a back of Derrick Henry's caliber there. Like, that's a unique thing they have. And I know Patrick Queen's gone defensively, but I still think that defense is going to be pretty good. Maybe not as dominant as it was last year, but pretty good. So I and Cincinnati, they have that Jamar Chase thing kind of hanging over them right now. That
T.
defense,
Higgins as well.
Yeah, and that defense... is, I mean, they still have Anna Marillo, the D coordinator, who's good, but they've lost a lot of talent on that defense in the last couple of years, too.
You know, I was talking about the Bills earlier with the window closing. It feels like a little bit with that with the Bengals. If they can't get over the hump this year, is Jamar Chase going to be happy and one out? T. Higgins is probably going to be gone. Joe Mixon is gone, so now you've got to reestablish a running game, which I thought Mixon was very important to what they did overall. And so now they have to figure out how to do that again. The Browns, like I said, I think that's a team that's in transition. Let's go to AFC South, which has now become an interesting division, which used to be kind of like the throwaway division. It used to be like the AL Central of baseball. Texans, Colts, Jags, Titans. Let's go ahead and eliminate the Titans out of the conversation. I think
Titans are going to be one of the worst teams in the NFL, actually. They might get the number one pick.
You know, that's crazy. Here they have two great receivers and a quarterback that you could probably say isn't as good as Jacoby Brissett. Or just as, like, if you said, give me Will Levis or give me Jacoby Brissett, but Jacoby Brissett has an all-star potentially behind him ready to go, who would you take? I'd be like, well, put him on the team with Brissett and get that all-star ready to go, and you're firing on engines. Oh, wait a minute. It's Calvin Ridley and DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah.
So they've got a great receiving core, a horrible quarterback situation. They got rid of Malik.
Willis. Yeah,
Malik Willis. Right. They got rid of him. They sent him off to Green Bay. So the Jags make a very interesting, compelling story. I think they got mollywopped a bit by the Texans in what was supposed to be the narrative of the AFC South. The Jags were supposed to be the sexy team last year. Were they going to win more than 10 games? It was a popular bet. Now, do you feel like the Jags are clear second fiddle to the Texans?
I do, and I think the Texans, I mean, they add Stephon Diggs, D'Amico Ryan's now in his second year, C.J. Stroud in his second year. I think that team is going to be one of the – because you know sometimes those teams are good, they have a down second year, and they're better in the third year. I think this is going to be one of those teams that just stays pretty good, and they're going to win that division.
Producer check, did I say Stephon Gilmore before, or did I say Stephon Diggs?
I thought you said – Diggs.
I think you said Stephon Diggs.
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right, yeah, that's, you like that little bit right there? As a producer check. Did I say something incorrect before?
Yes. And if, yeah.
So, yeah, the Texans, I think they've got a structure in place that allow them to be very dominant for years. And it goes back to a conversation we had early. If you missed it, just get the Odyssey app. It's free. Type in WEEI. Go back to chapter. It'll probably be the first or second chapter. because of the state tax that doesn't exist in Texas, the Texans now have a situation where they've got a head coach that's built a culture with a quarterback who's part of the culture that even goes upstairs, right? Remember, we've joked about, like, you know, maybe Deshaun Watson didn't work out because him and DeAndre Hopkins played too much rap music and might have cursed on Sundays. Like, you now have something different with C.J. Stroud there. So the Texans are one of those teams that I think are built to always, to at least for the next 3 to 5 seasons, win the AFC South and then see what happens when they get in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think they're, to me, legitimately better than the Jags, better than the Colts, and better than the Titans. Like, that should be their division this year, and I think probably next year, too.
Yeah, I think the Colts, I don't think they're totally sold on Anthony Richardson. I just get this feeling like...
Like, well, we talk about Drake May needing things to develop on. Like, right. Anthony Richardson had a 50% completion percentage in college, and it's not like Florida was doing crazy complex stuff when he was there. Like,
yeah,
he's got a lot to, and I think he's got a ton of potential, but he's got a lot to work on.
Yeah, we'll see how that all plays out. I don't know if it plays out well for the Colts. That's why I think the Patriots have a chance to beat the Colts if they see him again pretty soon. All right, in the AFC West, the Broncos, Chiefs, Raiders, Chargers, are we fooling ourselves by saying anything is like Chiefs and everybody else is last?
Yeah, I will say, though, like, I think the Chiefs win the division. I think they're the one or the two seed in the playoffs, but I think the Chargers, KJ, can win 11 or 12 games. I think that's a much better roster than people think. Now they have Jim Harbaugh. I think they can come out of the gates and they can play well and they can really compete to be a legit playoff team.
I could see that, right? Because go back to the Bengals and the Bills that we've talked about, right? If these teams have that form of slippage, this is where you might see someone like the Chargers who are able to ascend back into maybe, I mean, we've seen them in the wild card, but maybe a higher wild card spot, maybe a top, or maybe the second wild, one or two, but not the three, which has usually been what's happened with teams coming out of the AFC West. So we get to a playoff scenario. We see the Chiefs, you see the Ravens, the Jets. We've talked about the Texans as well. Who do you see coming down to an AFC championship matchup?
I think it's the Ravens and the Chiefs once again. I think we get a rematch.
Watch this. I think it's the Jets and the Chiefs.
Yeah.
And we get the Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes showdown. That was kind of supposed to be kind of the storyline of Aaron Rodgers coming to the AFC, the old school versus the burgeoning new school. Kind of like, all right, he didn't really take out Tom Brady, but here's Aaron Rodgers. I think it comes down to the Jets and the Chiefs in the AFC championship. It'll be a fascinating game. And I think it's a game where the Jets may win just because Aaron Rodgers has been on the road like that in cold weather, or at home in cold weather. Now, probably, you know, shard more than he has actually been successful. I mean, how many Super Bowls has this guy won? But yeah. I think
I wouldn't be shocked if the Jets get there. I would have them probably losing to the Chiefs or the Ravens in like the divisional round.
I think that defense will travel. Again, just tell yourself again, how did the Jets win 7 games last year and Aaron Rodgers got hurt on the second play?
Yeah.
How? So that defense travels in a healthy Aaron Rodgers and that receiver core and that running game they have, and the offensive line has improved? I'm a little bit of a believer of the Jets this year. I hate to say that.
No, I agree. I think they're going to win the division. I think they're, to me, the divisional round, but I'm not going to be shocked if they're in the AFC championship game either.
KJ and Lines on WEEI, 617-779-7937. Text line 37937. We get to those messages next. And also, say what? Yep, it's back to school time, and those Gen Z kids have something to say. Next on WEEI. KJ Lyons, kick your Sunday off. Hope you're enjoying the show on WEEI, 617-779-7937. Text line 37937. We're a few minutes away from Say What? I mean, the logo and the lingo is just different these days. John and I joke, and I'm sure, I know you're thinking the same way as I'm looking at you. Tell me you're not, like, this is about the time we start thinking about food and eating, don't we?
I actually had a snack in between the last two segments, so.
I
was ahead of you.
Oh, my gosh. So, look.
I'm already thinking about what I'm ordering for dinner, though.
See, there you go. Because, like, look, people, like, you just sit up there and you talk. Like, when you use your mouth a lot, you get hungry.
I'm with you.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, but, you know, I will never trust a social media critic to determine what my palate should be. I don't know if you guys, like, are you guys getting sick of people who are just suddenly fruit? Because they think of it, social media, everybody's an expert on everything. But do I need you to be an expert on food if you, like, don't cook it? Like, if you don't cook the food, you're not an expert. You're just an eater. Like, do you guys, like, take advice if anybody on social media says, this tastes good, I'm going to go eat it?
No, but it, like, every once in a while, if someone posts a picture of food that looks good, I might be like, oh, I want to eat that. But for the most part, no.
Totally fine. That looks delicious to you. You know your palate. But when you ask some, when you're listening to someone say, hey, their food is good, couldn't you go, hey, I can go find out for myself if their food is good? And here's the other thing I would say to anybody who's a social media food critic. Don't go to places if you have a food allergy and then try and make them change the way they make food and then complain that you have a food allergy. Like, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. That's why I can never, you can show me a plate of food, looks really good. I can tell me, I could care less. I could care less. Like, is that something you would take advice for, Jacob?
John? I mean, that's a huge industry, though. The whole YouTube and social media food creator scene is insane right now. It's like if you post the food
or they're just eating it.
No, just eating it. If you post a video saying these are the best places in Boston, people are going to click on it. You're going to get a million views on YouTube pretty easily.
Right. But the idea, and then granted, it's good for the food industry. I totally get that. But wasn't there a girl who, like, I think she worked for Chick-fil-A. And do you remember this? You guys remember hearing the story? And then she worked for them and then asked, could she be a food critic for them and pay her more for being a food critic? And she said, they said no. It's like, why'd you get back?
Worth the shot, I guess.
Well, yeah, great, worth the shot. But what a better way to ask to do something else besides, I don't know, the job you're hired to do. Like, I mean, that's what's crazy. Text line 37937, Jacob, what you got?
So I have a lot of people doubting Aaron Rodgers. Let's see. Aaron Rodgers is 1-4 in conference title games. I have no faith in him.
Well, that's five games he's played in, so there's five chances he couldn't have got. There were five chances to get to the Super Bowl. Yes, he went once, but the Jets, how many times? I mean, what? The Jets have been in one conference game in 30 years?
I agree that Rodgers has been a little overrated in some of those big games. So, like, the 2014 one, like, his teammate didn't recover an onside kick, and they would have won in Seattle. So, like, he should have won that one. I think the Brady one was bad. Like, Brady threw three interceptions in that game. The Packers were at home in 2020, and they still lost. Like, that one was – I thought that one was a bad loss for Rodgers.
Well, I think the thing with Rodgers is his biggest complaint is that he doesn't have superstars around him.
It said 1-4. I don't know if he's been in five. Like, is one of them that 07 one that Brett Favre played in when Rodgers was on the bench? And
I think it's been
2010, 2014.
He lost to Eli Manning. He lost to Eli Manning when they went to the Super Bowl.
That was in the divisional round, though.
That was divisional.
Yeah, because the Giants threw a Hail Mary at the end of the first half and caught it in the end zone.
So who did the Giants beat to get to the Super Bowl that year?
The 49ers, I think.
Was that?
Yeah, it was like a low score because it would have been like – Jim, it was almost the Harbaugh brothers Super Bowl the year before it actually happened.
That's right. That's right. So it could be 1-4. Okay, but we're not going to.
I don't want to get the weeds on that.
Right. All right. 37937. Another text line before we get to say what.
So we have somebody hating on Lions' take about the Titans being the worst team in the NFL. Do you want to defend yourself?
Yeah, that's the polite way, Jacob, to put what they wrote. Look, we're talking about a team that won.
Hey, why are we picking on Lions? Like, look, go ahead, John. Yeah.
Look, here's the thing about the Titans. First of all, I didn't say they would be the worst team. I said they'd be one of the worst. Second of all, they won six games last year, fired a coach in Mike Vrabel, who I think is pretty good. PFF has their offensive line ranked 30th, which, believe it or not, is even worse than the Patriots this year. Yes, they drafted J.C. Latham, but he's a rookie to rely on. And if you look at that receiving core, I like Calvin Ridley and DeAndre Hopkins, but neither of those guys are as good as what they had a few years ago in A.J. Brown. And defensively, they have some nice pieces. Like, I like Tavondre Sweat. I like Jeffrey Simmons. I like Legarius Sneed a lot. I just don't think there's enough there, especially at the quarterback position and along the O-line, for them to win enough games. Like, this was a bad team last year that, yes, added Sneed, yes, added Ridley, but you still have a huge question to quarterback, and now you have a rookie head coach as well.
Look, they're probably going to be the worst team in the AFC South, right? So they're the worst in their division. Yeah. Then, if you look at the AFC North, they're probably not better than any of those four teams, including the Steelers, who would be the worst in their division. Then you go to the AFC West. They're not going to be the Chiefs.
They might be better than the Raiders.
They might be better than the Raiders, okay? And the Broncos will put them in that team. So that's three. And then they're not going to be better than any of the teams in the AFC East outside of the – maybe not even better than the Patriots. Maybe. The Patriots and them might be neck and neck. I don't – maybe the Titans go 6-11 and maybe the Patriots go 5-12, right? So just in the AFC, the Titans are at least one of the bottom three teams.
So I know we didn't get to the NFC, but like the NFC has Carolina, who stinks, and I think the Cardinals are going to stink. But they have a lot of teams that are
well. John,
above
if you're bottom three in half the equation, you're not going to be more than six,
right? And that's the thing about the NFC is there's a lot of good teams in the NFC, and even those second tier or lower tier teams, I still think are better than Tennessee.
37937. One more text line, then we'll get to say what.
All right, so I have. Let's see. Aaron Rodgers is going to do a mushroom and end up in Nepal with Ricky Williams.
I guess that's an amateur writer attempt at humor. I can't knock it. It was an attempt at it wasn't a bad attempt at humor. Maybe some better writing.
And I think the Rodgers thing, like, I think you can ride that out for like a season or so. If he was going to be there for 5 years, I think the act would go really tired and they wouldn't want him there anymore. But I think they can put up with it for 1 year, maybe two, to try to get to a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think he's a one-and-done guy.
You might be right. I'm just saying I think that act of it you can deal with for a year or two, and he's not going to be there for more than a year or two.
All right, so a friend of mine was just wondering, like, these different words they hear their kids say around the house. Like, they cannot pick it up. So we present... Say what?
I don't understand what you're saying, bud.
Fasha is dad. Dad is Fasha.
We'd only circumvent, excuse me, circumcise.
Whole pot crash and come around. We can't get with this check on. We came on.
All right. In front of Jacob, because he's the closest to Gen Z, slang terms that are going around, and John and I have to discover these Gen Z terms. Hit it, Jacob.
Some of these are Gen Z. Some of them I would say even younger than Gen Z, right. Gen Alpha. First up, we got goats.
Yeah, that's greatest of all time, right? That's one, right? John, you agree? Yeah.
Yeah, that we know that one.
Yeah, we know that one. All right, next one.
Cap.
That means you're lying.
Yep, you're lying. There you go.
Sigma.
I have no idea.
Sigma. All right, so Greek alphabet, Sigma. Oh, God, I don't know.
It means good or the best.
Sigma. Why wouldn't it be alpha?
It's better than alpha, apparently.
Oh, gosh. Next.
We have skibbity.
No idea.
Skibbity. Skibbity. Skittish?
That sounds like something from like the 1930s. So.
Skibbity. Skittish, maybe? Skibbity dibbity? Skibbish? Skittish?
No, that's wrong. It means bad or cool.
Why don't I just say bad or cool? Okay,
I don't know. Let's see. Delulu.
No idea.
I'm going to say delusional.
Delusional, maybe?
Yeah, delusional. Yeah, we got one. All right, next.
Riz.
Oh, does that mean like you're making fun of somebody or something like that? Like you're.
I would think that would be razzing on. Riz. I would say, like, is that short for, like, charisma? Or, like, he's got Riz to him?
Kind of. Giat.
Giat? John.
No idea.
Giat. Giat. Like, oh, wow. Like, no way. Or, like, shocking. Or, like I can't say it on the air, but, like, giat! She got a...
I think it means a woman with a large butt.
Yeah, so that's gyat. Gyat. Yeah, that's right. I'm right. Gyat. Dang. All right. Next one.
Mogging?
Mogging.
No idea.
Hogging and something with an M. Maybe hogging and mogging. Mogging. I have heard of mugging, like mean mugging, which is like you make a mean face. Mogging, I don't like some type of modeling. I don't know.
It means trying to cut someone out of a photo.
Cut somebody out.
I have no idea what this one means, honestly.
Okay.
All right, we got two more. Pookie. What's a pookie?
Is that like a term of affection?
It is, yes, it is.
That went two different shifts of the night.
It means like your partner.
Okay.
Let's see. Sus.
Oh, that means you're not buying it. You know, you're suspicious.
Suspect. Yeah. Suspect.
Yeah, that's right. All right, that's all the words we got.
KJ, you did better than me.
So maybe, because you know what? I pay attention. Like, I try to be hip.
You're a man of the people.
I'm a man of the people. And the final 35 minutes of KJ and Lyons is next. We talk about the Gerard Mayo decision to have a press conference about something he already mentioned that he said was already going to happen. That's next here on WEEI. Good Sunday to you.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.